discussion so far today has been whether or not, if we get economic development there, it will help the district. And I think in terms of the transfer of development rights, you're creating a funding mechanism for people to improve the contributing and historic structures within the core that give it much of its benefit. And in terms of limiting where the transfer development happens, you're providing an influx of people, a concentration in energy there, where you'll have more people walking around. And as a result, I think we can't guarantee what's going to happen, but that it is possible that you'll see more development of the historic and contributing structures there. Looking at the balancing between how much FAR and how much height, we believe that with the carefully considered design guidelines, it's possible to create structures that are higher and are sensitively related to the environment and have an appropriate and a reasonable feeling at the pedestrian level down on the street. I think sort of at its core, we think that with these five opportunity sites, the staff has proposed and the Planning Commission has supported a scalpel approach, that this isn't a hatchet. One of the things that I asked when I came to this, and it sort of comes from my background, if someone says you can't do X on the other side of this line, then I want to know the line is in the correct position. And what we heard testimony about was that 20 years ago when the historic district was established, there was debate about where the boundaries of the district should actually be, and it wasn't crystal clear that the lines should be drawn where they are, and also that if the district were created today, it's likely these sites wouldn't even be within the district. And I can say personally that gave me more comfort with allowing more to happen on these sites. We've also heard about the risk of eroding the district, but I think that with the constraints that we're proposing, with the design guidelines, the FAR limited and the height limited to work together and allow step backs, that you can allow this without going down the slippery slope, that you can allow something and not have the entire district fall. And so that's why we're supportive of the recommendation and forwarded it in this form.
My name is Howard Shapiro. I'm a planning commissioner as well. The resolutions came to you with unanimous support of the Planning Commission, but I want you to know that that wasn't without a great deal of conversation and some reservation on the part of a substantial number of us in terms of will this be successful. We heard a lot of testimony pro and con about attempts have been made in this district before to revitalize it and haven't succeeded for one reason or another. And where we came down eventually, unanimously, is that we all want to see development there. And I would characterize it differently as life and livability. We would like to see more liveliness taking place in that district. And we believe fundamentally that development will encourage that. There was conversation earlier on about whether 130-foot buildings could be iconic enough or persuasive enough to change a district. I think that depends on architectural excellence and some intelligent design, which we have a great abundance of in this community. So I would look to that community, if you pass this along, to help create a district, including some of the wonderful ironwork that remains available to us, that is iconic but also accommodates economic development in the terms of height. As I say, we heard a lot of testimony that was skeptical of whether this would work or not, and we remain hopeful but skeptical. So it was very important to the three of us to come before you today and say it wasn't just an automatic, easy issue. It was something we wrestled with very, very sincerely. I personally had a conversation with one of the people involved in this, and I'm convinced that he and his organization will bring forth an interesting building. We'll have to wait and see about that. But at this point, we as a commission are comfortable putting before you the notion that we should create life and liveliness in this community, and we believe this concept is the way to make it work. Finally, I'll just say that we did have a hearing with the Design Commission, our sister organization. It's never pleasant to have disagreements between city organizations of citizens that are trying to work together. They're sincere in their concerns. I believe we are sincere in ours. So it's up to you guys to figure out the compromise. But at the end of the day, we do want to see life and liveliness happen there, and we're impatient to see it happen.
Thank you. My name is Andre Baugh, Portland Planning Commissioner. And follow up on Howard's comments, My issue is, and really is pretty central here, how do you measure success in this district? We've had 30 years of history of incentives, different options in trying to get development to occur and ignite this district. But what is the measure by which this city, city council, you will look and say, what's passed today is going to work? As Howard mentioned, as Michelle has talked about, there has been compelling testimony before us as a planning commissioner that three developers, performas, have all nodded their heads and said, yes, if this passes, generally, we think we can do something with it. We think we can go forward and develop in this neighborhood on these opportunity sites. I guess at this point now is to say, from my standpoint, how do you measure that? It's short term. It's not another 30 years to allow that land to lay there and we look at it 30 years down the road. It may be 5 years at the most. Maybe some of my colleagues are shorter than that in 2 years. But it is, if there's not a development, let's come back and take a look at this and maybe height and FAR and all the things are not the tools, or you need more tools. But how do we get a vibrant community in this district short term? We've been at this a long time, and we may need more tools, we may need less tools, but let's relook it. Let's not let it lay there for a long period of time. Thank you.
Good question. First of all, I just want people who are watching this on TV to know that it's as much of a treat for them, for us, as it is for them to listen to these kinds of high-level panels of very thoughtful citizens, and we appreciate your time and your testimony. Andre, the question of balance has been raised by your panel. Mm-hmm. Were there other options that you considered which might have created a different kind of funding mechanism which you viewed as inferior to this mechanism of the five opportunity sites?
I don't believe so.
Yeah, I think as planning commissioners, our toolbox is somewhat limited. There was testimony concerning other, perhaps, taxing strategies that could be pursued that aren't available to us. I mean, part of what I would say in terms of the financing, we know that the tax increment financing has gone away. You know, things have started to happen in the district, but there was the concern that if we don't do more, we could lose that momentum and not have continued motion forward.
But we weren't presented with other – part of the balance here is that with the FAR and the height, we were going to be able to generate money to preserve a historic district and get money back into that. And that's kind of the balance that was presented. That balance, I don't think it's a long term. I think, again, I think it's a short term, but that's the mechanism was height and FAR give you an option to create revenue to – support a historic district to get to help it grow too.
And Howard, you talked about creating livability and liveliness and dynamic urban fabric. So why not, as some have suggested, just allow for the transfer of the air rights outside the district and build up along the perimeter rather than within the district and the designated opportunity sites?
That may be the beauty of the plan, in my opinion, because it keeps the energy of the district within the district and keeps all of the funds dedicated to it within the geographic boundaries, if I understand your question. I think that this district, as has been said before, this is going to be redundant, is probably the jewel of the city. It's the most important ingredient that we have in terms of history and memory of how this community evolved. And so how it develops and the way it develops is very, very important. And so to answer your question, Nick, I think it's very important that we keep the funding, the energy, and the enthusiasm of the district within it.
Ms. Rudd, if I may, taking a cue from Mr. Ball, how would you measure success in 10 or 15 years under this proposal?
Conversion of at least some of the opportunity sites to non-parking uses, something that has people in the district active and having generated resources so that those historic and contributing sites within the district have been able to better reach their potential, that they've been restored, that cast iron has been added, and you really have a sense of place when you walk into the district.
And I guess the last question for anyone who chooses to field it is, how inconsistent are, in your judgment, the design guidelines which were adopted and your proposal? It's been suggested to us that there would have to be a fundamental, a fairly substantial effort of reconciliation of either recasting or reconciliation.
I'm not sure I quite follow you. Ask that another way. I'm not sure I understand the question.
So the action taken by Landmarks and some of the guidelines that they've adopted versus the proposal that's before us from planning, are they compatible or are they at odds?
They're at odds, I believe.
In terms of the design guidelines.
Yeah. Well, I can't speak to design.
I can't speak to the design guidelines, but I think I would say specifically technically, I would leave that to staff in terms of the compatibility. But I would say as a general philosophy, I think the question of whether or not, as Howard said, whether or not you could design something compatible in that neighborhood, whatever the guidelines are, I think there's the talent in town to do that. And if there's not, we ought to get the talent to do that, because I think it has been done in other cities. It's how do you make that compromise and what are they? Technically, I can't tell you if the compatibility is there.
And I would just add compatibility with the understanding that we are talking about the edge, and it's different to have 130-foot structure at the edge than in the core next to a historic structure. So we think that compatibility can be achieved with the right language and design.
Let me just say finally, because it just occurred to me to make this connection, because it's very important, this Portland plan we've been talking about, this whole idea that we've embarked on to give the city a different and wonderful look in 20 years has begun. It isn't as if it's something out there, it's actually begun. And this work that we're considering today will be part of it, I believe. So as we consider Old Town Skidmore, we also have to look at it in the framework of how it's going to make the macro city look. And I think very important that we balance what we have with what we want to make the city work. So
are there any examples that you know of? I was sitting here trying to, I'm thinking that I've, walking downtown, I've certainly seen buildings of at least around 130 feet in height that are historic, that may not be in the historic district, but are of the type you are describing, so that they're 130 feet or larger, but historic, that would be examples of the kind of buildings you'd like to see designed. Are there any that you know of that you used as a model in coming up with this height?
I don't think that any of the historic structures get that big. My memory from the testimony was roughly 60 to 75 feet was how high the buildings got during that period. But that's my memory. Correct me.
Flatiron building.
Doesn't happen to be here, but it's a nice idea. Just as a final thought, it's intuitively seductive to imagine that within this city, the designers, the architects, the world-acclaimed people that are here, that we can't come up with some very unique and very outstanding compatible structures that work for the Historic Landmarks Commission, that work for us and work for the city. I'm very convinced that that talent is here. I think we should tap it, and I think we should allow it to be part of this whole 20-year framework we're dealing with here.
So I hear you saying loud and clear, let them build it, but let's hold them to the highest possible standards of compatibility and use the design guidelines to get there without creating barriers.
And if they don't, let's go back and revisit some other options.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Before we hear from the Portland Development Commission, have one of our folks to testify has to leave soon. Mary Oberst, could you come forward and give your testimony, please?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for your consideration, members of the City Council. My name is Mary Oberst. I'm the First Lady of the State of Oregon. I'm also the Oregon Advisor to the National Trust for Historic Preservation. The Trust mission is helping people protect, enhance, and enjoy the places that matter to them. So my role as an advisor is to be the National Trust eyes and ears in Oregon. I'm here today to ask you to protect the integrity of the Skidmore Old Town National Historic Landmark District and the unique collection of cast iron buildings therein. The National Historic Landmark designation means that Skidmore Old Town is nationally significant. Thus, your constituents in this decision-making process are not only the citizens of Oregon, but also every other Oregonian, and indeed every citizen of the United States. You have received, and I hope you've read, the National Trust letter of November 4th. That letter, in essence, supports the proposed design guidelines and cast iron resolution and opposes the proposed zoning code guidelines. I want to highlight today just one of the issues raised in that letter. The proposed zoning code guidelines allow new buildings to be 130 feet tall when the buildings in the rest of the district are just 40 to 60 feet tall. To allow this out-of-scale new development is to diminish the historical integrity of the district and of the individual buildings. I want you just to take an imaginary walk with me through that district. I'm sure you know it well. Linger at one of those cast iron buildings and trace the intricacies with your fingers. And then just look behind you at the facade across the street and tip your head up to see how the second and third stories appeal. And just create a cohesive landscape. Now, imagine that experience again, but dominated by 130-foot tall new buildings. And you can see that you have lost the experience. Portland's collection of cast iron buildings, as you've heard, is unique in Oregon and in the United States. The economic revitalization of the district is valuable, to be sure, but so is preserving the city's historic treasures. The development plans of four property owners are important, to be sure, but so is the opportunity for all of us, as the National Trust says, to enjoy the places that matter to us. And this place matters. The Skidmore Old Town National Historic Landmark District needs something other than very tall buildings encroaching on it. It needs your vision. This is your opportunity to think big, but not tall. Think about creating a strategy to restore those buildings. Think about restoration as a green building technique and provide incentives for that green building restoration. Think about the idea that new development that is compatible with those old buildings is a valuable public purpose and provide incentives for compatible development. And last, think about what Oregon will lose if you don't think about those things. Thank you.
Thank you. Mary, if I could, just a point of privilege.
Sure.
As the current vice chair of the Oregon Cultural Trust, I don't think we've ever had a first lady who's been a greater champion of the arts, heritage, and culture in this state.
Thank you.
And you not only have spoken out, but you and your husband have convened Days of Culture in Salem, have brought attention to these issues, have helped the Cultural Trust move forward. And I'd just be remiss if I didn't say that we are extremely grateful for your advocacy work on behalf of all of us.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Fish.
Thank you,
Mr. Mayor.
We still have two groups to hear from. Next, we'll hear from the Portland Development Commission. Excuse me, folks. Commissioner, Development Commission Lee Bowers.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Lou Bowers, and I am the Central City Division Manager for PDC. I have some written testimony from Bruce Warner that I will hand out at the end. First, I wanted to just reiterate a little bit of the history. PDC and BOP did participate in this study, which was described earlier by Rick Michelson. In 2006, the PDC board adopted this development framework as the guiding policy for implementation and funding priorities to revitalize the Ankeny-Burnside district. There are a range of actions in here, as have been described, including public realm improvements. Waterfront Park is currently under construction, as you know, updating the historic design guidelines, creating zoning incentives for the additional height on key catalytic sites, as well as stimulating redevelopment on certain key sites within the district. As part of this study, we did some significant economic analysis by Johnson Gardner and Economics and Planning Systems on the feasibility of redeveloping existing surface parking lots with new housing, office, and retail. Their analysis shows that there's a gap in all the pro formas of all these different uses. Depending on the use, the gap can run from $30,000 to $50,000 per unit for workforce housing, or can give a developer a negative return of 2 to 4% given the existing entitlements. The cost to redevelop the surface parking lots results in greater risk and lower returns than the existing parking does. So we get caught in a little bit of a stalemate in the current situation. In addition, the small lot size and the current height limits create a scenario where the current parking is really the highest and best used. And if you get some of these lots appraised, that's what you find. The economics work best for parking. Because of the constraints on development and the current economics, the parking lots have failed to redevelop over the last several decades, and current conditions have not changed that outcome. However, we have had some success in the district. We've had the Mercy Corps project, Smith Block, White Stag Building, but all of these have required some significant public investment through PDC tax increment or through new market tax credits. With an investment of about $25 million in PDC funds, we've generated about $400 million in other investment in the district. Most of that has been in renovation or public improvements or a combination of new construction and renovation. We haven't yet had new construction on a surface parking lot, freestanding new construction, which I think is what this debate is really about. It's also important to note that PDC did sponsor and pay for the new historic design guidelines, and we see it as a package and as a balancing between the FAR zoning and the new historic guidelines fitting together. The mission statement for the project is to create a vital and vibrant district that retains and reinforces the history and character of the Ankeny-Burnside area. As you are aware, the downtown waterfront urban renewal area has terminated, and there are no additional funds. So it is not going to be possible, in the immediate future at least, to use tax increment as a source of public financing. So without some additional tool for these five sites, I believe that the economics are fairly clear. We will stay where we are now with surface parking lots. As we phase out urban renewal in various areas, we need to think creatively about what are other tools that we can use to replace that and provide other sorts of incentives. I believe that the package that's being presented to you is an example of some replacement tools through the FAR, through the bonus, that will both stimulate redevelopment and create some funding to rehab the existing historic buildings. So I see this as a sort of post-urban renewal strategy that we're experimenting with in this area with these five sites. I think that's a very important, for me, a very important perspective on it. It's also important that the FAR, without the additional height, you've seen the arguments, I think the buildings get too blocky. So we are supporting the Planning Commission in the additional FAR and the height. Without that, the economic feasibility, I think it's fairly clear to say that there will not be economic redevelopment. The economics of it just don't work. Now, if you do, and Commissioner Fish has asked this, if you do make this change, can I tell you that development's going to happen? No. I can tell you that it's a necessary, but not probably total, not the only condition necessary. You will have several building owners and developers that will testify to you later, and I think you can ask them specifically about their buildings on it. So what we have tried to do here is create balance between encouraging infill on surface parking lots and strengthening the historic district. And a final point, those of you that have worked closely with developers know that if you want any kind of development in this district, you need to provide them certainty. And I think that leads to an argument that if you choose to go with the additional height, I think you may want to tweak the design guidelines to make sure that they specifically refer to these buildings that are being offered this additional benefit so that there's as much certainty as reasonably possible. I'm confident that with the creativity of our existing architects and guidelines that the Planning Landmarks Commission would enforce, we can come up with new Portland-based models that will both be economically viable and be beneficial to the district. I will hand out the testimony unless there are other questions.
Lou, I made my first trip the other day to the White Stag Building for a conference, and it really is a beautiful building, beautiful renovation. They have some beautiful public spaces. I mean, it's a triumph. And we've obviously all seen the design for the Hacker Building at Mercy Corps, and that's going to be a tremendous addition. Yet we've heard from prior folks testifying that these proposed changes, height and FAR would destroy the integrity, historical integrity of this district. Would you speak to that?
I have confidence in the creative potential of our design community, and I believe that at 130, with sufficient setbacks and design guidelines, we could have a very dynamic historic district that would have significantly more vitality than it has now. It concerns me that I think the only alternative is that we continue with the existing surface parking lots for the indefinite future, and to me that's a very unacceptable alternative. So I think we can find a way to make it work.
Lou, 5 years ago, would you have predicted the University of Oregon and Mercy Corps would be in the buildings that they're going to occupy?
3 years ago, probably not five because we hadn't started the study yet, but 3 years ago as we started working on it, I think it became more and more plausible. And frankly, that was in part because of this study, and I think they will both say that, in that the vision that this study created for how the entire area could be revitalized and the commitment of public resources to the area, which gave them the confidence to move into an area which many would call pretty dicey in terms of some of the elements there. And they were willing to go, particularly the University of Oregon, as a pioneer and lead, and then Mercy Corps followed quickly in the Smith blocks based on our ability to plan and give them confidence that this was going to be a better, improved district. And I think that confidence is, again, what we want to try to, that momentum is what we'd like to build on.
I'm curious, you've mentioned that twice now, that the infusion of public funds is what helped create these, the interest in restoring the White Stag building. Is it to imply that if these five sites were to be developed, that there'd be no public funds involved?
Given the end of the downtown waterfront urban renewal district, there would be no urban renewal funds available. At this point, there aren't many other tools available. So I see this as an attempt on the part of the Bureau of Planning to come up with, again, some post-urban renewal tools, a different basket of incentives that we can use in place of as much or any direct public financial incentive. And I think as we do the Portland plan, we'll be looking at this same theme and trying to look at other alternatives. So there is no money in PDC's budget for any of these five sites. Our money has all been committed, and I don't anticipate, so of course the commission could change, but I don't anticipate that changing unless some major site bellies up.
Thank you. Our last invited testimony is from the Old Town Chinatown Neighborhood Association, the Visions Joint Land Use Committee. Patrick Gortmaker and Paul Verhoeven.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Patrick Gortmaker, and I'm co-chair with Paul Verhoeven for the Joint Land Use and Design Review Committee, which is a committee made up of the Neighborhood Association for Old Town Chinatown and the Visions Committee. So before we move forward with our proposals to both the zoning code amendments and the design guidelines, I want to, it's just very important that I reiterate that our group, working for so long on this project, going back to the Ankeny-Burnside framework, has never taken lightly the treasure of this National Historic Landmark District. The critical decision for this district is today, and this district, as you've heard, needs all the incentives brought to bear to continue the economic momentum that we have been experiencing over the last 3 years. And prior to that, it's not the success of the Mercy Corps and Portland Saturday Market and Waterfront and White Stag Building with the University of Oregon, enormous successes. Prior to that, of course, we had success with storefront renovations and the PDC grant money for storefronts. We did have the Union Gospel Mission do an expansion and a very successful renovation of their existing structure. But a year and a half ago, we were sent away as part of the Ankeny-Burnside framework to look at all available opportunities on these surface parking lots, which at that time were 16 analyzed, and we whittled this down to five opportunity sites. And so it seems here that we're focused today not so much on the preservation and protection and enhancement of the historic resources in the districts. I sat through the 2004 process of the Historic Resource Code amendments and understanding the importance of the preservation and protection of those resources. What we don't agree on is how new development will fit in the context of those historic resources and ultimately the economic vitality of the district. We are not talking any longer on these viable opportunity sites about theoretical development. You'll hear later today from the five opportunity sites about very specific pro formas, and we're moving from theoretical to real proposals for development when we talk about consideration of additional height and FAR. So we'd just like to spend a few moments about our proposals specific to the zoning code amendments and the design guidelines.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners. Paul Verhoeven, I'm Executive Director of Portland Saturday Market and co-chair with Patrick of the Old Town Chinatown Neighborhood Association Visions Committee Land Use. I appreciate this opportunity to talk to you, and the first part of our testimony, we'll just talk about some of the things that we see as would help with these considerations before you. We support the planning plan for the additional height on the five opportunity sites, but we feel that in fairness to the owners of the properties in the district on these, that they should all be equal, and we should be looking at 130 feet on all five of the sites rather than 130 on four, with only 100 on the one on closer to Chinatown. We also support a little increase greater than planning recommends for the FAR in order to get the projects really off the ground. I think you'll hear from the developers later, but really to make these feasible, we need FAR up to 8.5 to 1. You have to bear with me. I've got a little bit of the bug, I think, that's sweeping the city. So, but we're looking at 130 feet and 8.5 to 1 for the FAR. The neighborhood, community groups, and property owners in Old Town unanimously supported this position for the five opportunity sites that have currently been put before you. Another thing that really hasn't been touched on much today that I want to emphasize is that one of the key goals of the neighborhood groups is to increase the home ownership and the kind of the balance of housing in the neighborhood. The neighborhood traditionally has been challenged by a predominance of low-income housing. Currently, over 70% is 60% of MFI or below, much of it well below. And these opportunity sites give us an opportunity to put some housing into the district at that 60% or above that will help bring some balance and I think some stability to the neighborhood. Currently, 29% of the district is made up of surface parking lots. I think that's something that really needs to be talked about. We've heard from the Landmarks Commission that it's hard to hide a 130-foot building in the neighborhood. I put to you, it's equally hard to hide a surface parking lot. So I think the question before you really is, which is better for the long-term survival and growth of this district? Without the benefit of the URA TIF funding, which you've heard about from PDC and others, and combined with the general downturn in the economic climate, I fear that without these opportunity sites and some tools given to people to develop these, we'll see a continuation of the stagnation of the district that will continue to erode the historic character.
The design guidelines that we would also like to talk about, they are the roadmap to a successful preservation and enhancement of the resources in the district. And given its paltry 7 pages back in 1987 to over 75 pages now, it's a wonderful enhancement and protection for the district. However, we do feel that there is that disconnect for new development within the district, given the Planning Commission's recommendations and our recommendations. And so what we would like to put forward is specific amendments to the current design guidelines, which we feel not only will clarify this apparent disconnect between additional height and FAR on the five opportunity sites, but does take care of other what we feel are inconsistencies in the current design guidelines for step backs, orientation, type of construction, and materials. The goal was to make the best set of guidelines as possible, and we have achieved enormous steps in making them almost perfect. And we'd like to put forth these recommendations in regards to the design guidelines. We need to create that certainty. Certainly, we're closer to certainty as we go through a design review process. But without, we think, specific language addressing the additional height for new development on those opportunity sites, what we do is set ourselves up for potential appeals directly to you as the city council and potentially to the Land Use Board of Appeals, something that we all would like to try to avoid. So we are not changing any specific guidelines in the existing draft document. What we are doing is adding clarifying language to background information and examples used on how to achieve those guidelines. So you will not find any changes to design guidelines specifically in those recommendations. And we put those out there for you.
I'm just curious, have you had a chance previously to share this document with planning?
Yes, they have seen this document.
Okay. Well, we'll raise that with Gail. I don't think they've had a chance to respond to it. I'm talking about this document.
Yes. There are no changes to that document.
Going on to our closing here, you'll see later today testimony of real analysis and design models by property owners and stakeholders in an attempt to move forward in the feasibility. 3 years ago, we were asked to look at every opportunity to help ensure that this district survives and or thrives. And we're going through a minor renaissance in the district now. And it's kind of a combination of things. We had the Pearl building out and the pressure pushing down into Old Town finally. We had the TIF money available. We're looking at an opportunity now where you've asked a number of people whether these projects would be catalytic. And I think that the fact that these property owners are going to be here today to talk to you about these sites is demonstrates the fact that the Mercy Corps and the U of O projects have already been catalytic. 5 years ago, these property owners wouldn't be here asking you for 130 feet. They wouldn't have been building on Old Town, period. And so I think there is the momentum here. I think it's just super important to the livability and the viability of the district that we build on it and we don't let it slip away. Because the district sat for the first 20 years of this historic district with little or no change, and we really fear that is corrosive and more damaging than to build on these opportunity sites.
And we also feel what would be damaging is stopping that momentum by tying this opportunity up in the Portland plan. Nothing could be a worse outcome than having it fall back into the continued study and potentially 2 years in the Portland plan update. So the time is now. We feel the changes that we've recommended are good ones. And, you know, we in the district, we're all stewards of this national treasure. And so we feel that the recommendations that we put forth are sound. And we will take any questions. And thank you for this opportunity.
Questions from the commissioners? Thank you, folks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Gil, you're on the edge of your seat. Did you want to come back up? And
may I approach, Your Honor? I just wanted to clarify one point, lest we have left an impression in the staff presentation that may have caused greater concern than it needed to, and that has to do with perceived mismatch between the design guidelines which we created and which the Landmarks Review Board has gone over and refined and done a great job with, between that and the additional height in FAR that's within the Planning Commission recommendation. We don't think this amounts to wholesale or even major changes to the guidelines. They're probably something along the testimony you just heard, although we wouldn't vouch for that proposal 100%. We saw an earlier version of that last week. But basically what we think would be involved there, should you go that direction, would be adding to the background and examples sections of the guidelines, not so much changing the guideline rules, but the current guidelines are pretty much silent on additional height above and FAR above the 75-foot level. So if you go that direction, we'd at least want those guidelines to have some examples, as you were asking, how might you do that successfully, and simply clarifying in the background that if you go that direction, that the council has decided on 5 sites, additional height may occur and may be warranted, so that that's clear in the guidelines. And that's really the extent of it. So, thanks. I just thought that might help testifiers here so they weren't confused on that point. Thank you.
How many folks have signed up to testify?
We have 42 people left.
42 people. We're going to limit testimony to 2 minutes. And
could we perhaps?
They can do it in 2 minutes, Nick. It's 42 people.
Can we somehow, the people who are pitching, I'd like to have a little more time to engage.
You can ask them questions.
That's true.
Yes. Okay. And if you hear somebody say the exact same thing that you were going to say, you really don't have to come up and testify if you can feel compelled not to.
I've heard you say that for 4 years. I've never heard anybody take you up on that offer.
Well, I guess it shows the hopeful side of my nature, doesn't it? Okay, please call the first three.
The first three are Kathy Gelbreth, Mary Zarnecki, and Henry Kunowski. And they'll be followed by Greg Goodman, Mark Edlin, and Peggy Moretti.
Good afternoon. My name is Kathy Gelbreth. I'm the executive director of the Bosco Milligan Foundation. We own and operate the Architectural Heritage Center in the Central East Side, and we are a local partner organization of the National Trust for Historic Preservation. We're in favor of the design guidelines as proposed in the cast iron resolution and opposed to the zoning code amendments. We are unable to find any other examples of historic districts in the country that have used the strategy of opportunity sites to allow immensely large additional buildings. On the 5 opportunity sites, 3 of those sit at least a half block within the district's boundaries, the historic district's boundaries. They are not truly edge sites. Is the city of Portland really about to sacrifice the integrity and the future of this National Historic Landmark District for the off chance that, despite the fact that momentum is already underway, that we might achieve new buildings, large buildings that are really allowed almost anywhere else in the city of Portland? Instead, the council has the opportunity to make a once-in-a-lifetime decision at this point in time to plant the seeds for the creation of a nationally compelling historic destination in Skidmore Old Town. We oppose the massive amounts of FAR transfers. The zoning code amendments themselves talk about if they were allowed to be transferred outside the district, that they would potentially have unintended consequences elsewhere in the city. We're concerned about the intended consequences of that amount of FAR transferred within this 20-block district. We can build large new buildings anywhere, and instead of everybody relying on tax increment and financing, which we know is shrinking, there are another package of incentives that we've provided for green buildings, for transit-oriented developments, for affordable housing around the city, and I think that package of incentives, I think the development community and the preservation community has been waiting for that since demolition denial was restored to the code. We think there are a whole series of incentives that can be provided to stimulate development at a lower scale on the vacant properties. Thank you.
Kathy, if I could, I'm curious, if there was no activity on the 29% of the district that's now a surface parking lot, why is that, in your judgment, more in keeping with the historic integrity of the district than trying to incentivize some development?
We think the momentum is already underway, and I think we see that. Just like after the Albina Community Plan was adopted, the momentum was already underway, and in some ways we've been a little too successful and created some gentrification situations around the city that follow our well-intentioned plans, as visionary as they once seemed. I think we're going to see new development on those lots. I understand the economics of the return on surface parking lots, but if there are incentives for the property owners to partner with the city to provide the scale of buildings, the quality new construction, the reuse of the cast iron, and other compatible new construction, I think we can all win here. I think the owners of those properties can win, the city can win, and the historic district can win.
Hello, good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Mary Zarnicki. I'm a fourth-generation Oregonian and part of an architectural practice located in the Concord Building on 2nd and Stark, just a block and a half away from the historic district that we're concerned with today. And we practice and embrace new traditional architecture for modern living, and we strongly urge the council to approve the Skidmore Old Town Historic District guidelines as forwarded by the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission. Critical to the current success and future development is the size and scale of buildings. And in this era of wise, sustainable choices focused on high quality and wise use of resources, it is a necessity for Portland to step carefully. Teaching at Oregon School of Design was an experience that taught me what possibilities could happen in Portland. Student work ranged from new urban apartments on Burnside to a conservatory and an aquarium on the Willamette River. I saw the design of Portland buildings and spaces that use strong architectural precedent in their design for Portland buildings and spaces. In 1989, my thesis students invited Henry Hope Reed of Classical America to their graduation, and while here, Mr. Reed, who instituted the New York walking tours, gave a tour of downtown Portland. And this is interesting because his comments were on such public spaces as the federal building soon to be occupied by PNCA, commenting on the geography of Oregon being similar to the Italian landscape. And Mr. Reed has been speaking since the 50s, when he first started to give insight to the needs of needs for domes and towers and details and ornament and things that make our cities very beautiful. And I think in my time here, the Renaissance that we had in the Pearl was the first substantial urban neighborhood built in recent years, and it has inspired many. And I recall at the beginning, the first comments were a comparison to Paris, where all the buildings were a certain height. Okay.
Would you like to finish off your statement?
Well, there are several people that question. Historian Stephen Sims has mentioned that, you know, the idea of progress is something that we should really consider, that the use of certain heights of buildings and the use for certain buildings is appropriate to an area, that you certainly could take any building and make it beautiful depending on the height. But the real criteria is, what is the scheme, what is the plan? And there are many examples being done today, traditional architects all over the world that have done that. So I just want to connect to the fact that, you know,
ma'am,
we have...
I said to close it off, so okay. I think you went the other direction.
Sorry.
So please, you just in a brief few seconds, please close it off. You're way over your time.
Okay. Well, I guess I just want to urge the council to approve the Skidmore Historic Guidelines as forwarded by the Landmarks, and believe that quality and good judgment of what they have set up is a lesson that Portland needs to adhere to.
Mayor, Commissioners Fish and Leonard, my name is Henry Konowski. I'm here to read my testimony into the record. The ongoing efforts of the city and public-private interest to protect, enhance, and develop the Skidmore Old Town Historic District are highly commendable and long overdue. There is no doubt that the many years invested in this effort involve the broadest array of community involvement and participation that garnered the appearance of support for the process and amendments before you today. The value and significance of the district to the citizens of Portland is well established and noted across the Board of Historic Preservation Community. Given the district's accolades, it is somewhat puzzling that a 19th century historic district is being developed with 20th century stimulus tools in a 21st century economy. As noticed by the Planning Commission on 9/20/908, the code amendments are intended to increase opportunities for development in the district while at the same time increasing restoration and renovation opportunities of historic buildings. In other words, an economic trickle-down approach that promotes new development first with the intent that it will stimulate historic preservation. Not only is this prescriptive approach an inverse of the performance needed for the district, there are no similar models to be found across the nation to support this approach. This is not cutting-edge land use policy that Portland is known for, and the unintentional consequences of the proposed amendments will result in a significant diminishment of the district's integrity, sense of place, and context. It is not surprising that the Planning Commission's code amendment letter of transmittal to the City Council states that this recommendation to allow additional height and floor area on 5 property sites at the periphery of the historic district is in conflict with the view of the Portland Landmarks Commission. The driver for this amendment initiative is new development, not historic preservation. Any credible member of the preservation or conservation community would not and could not state with a straight face that the proposed amendments will ultimately benefit the district or the people of Portland. Since I do not consider myself an idealist or an obstructionist in this issue, rather a pragmatic optimist, I respectfully recommend that the Mayor and City Council stand down on this amendment and design guidelines. A fundamental reconceptualization of the issues should be undertaken, which would then come back before the Council when there is true consensus on the matter before you. Understanding that such a request...
Sir, your time is up.
Thank you.
Next three are Greg Goodman, Mark Edlin, and Peggy Moretti. They'll be followed by John Zarnicki, Jackie Paulison Loomis, and Rob Dordenak.
Good afternoon. My name is Greg Goodman. I have served on the Ankeny Skidmore Advisory Committee. I've served on the steering committee, and I'm a property owner in the area. Nick, unfortunately, you had to leave real quick. I wanted to, because Lou came up and talked about, they did do performance, PDC did performance, and every performance they did, regardless of type of development, had a negative. Parking, I continually hear about the parking issue, and I just wanted to say that parking represents, the parking revenue and the value of the property represents an extremely small amount of what the development costs on the project we are proposing. On 3rd and Ash, the land value represents $4 million out of a $60 million project. Steel and concrete have a bigger impact on being able to do something. And by the way, I hear people saying that it's not we don't know if this will work. Well, I'm here telling you, and Mark's here telling you, and you're going to hear from the tenants and other investors in the building that we do want to build a building. So it's our intent to build a building that the city will be proud of. I'd also like to thank Gil and Carl and Rick and Karen. They did an exceptionally good job, and obviously what you're hearing is a somewhat controversial issue. And the Planning Commission, too, I think they did a good job. We turned in a pro forma to the Planning Commission and to Gil and others that show there's a couple of minor modifications that we would ask for, and I've turned those in to you. That one is that the FAR go from 8 to 8.5, and I want you to understand, 8 to 8.5, we're going up 55 feet, but what we're proposing is an FAR increase of 1.5. So it's very, very small. So it's not a bulky building. Also, the second is include the residential bonus as part of the bonus features, with the first bonus going to the District Improvement Fund, which would create $1 million for the city. If I could say one more thing and wrap it up, the catalytic sites that people talk about, which I think are very, very important, represent about 10% of the total land mass in the area. They're on the edge. They represent 10% of the total landmass. So you keep hearing people, you'd think that the whole, number one, there's a demo denial. So nobody's proposing tearing down buildings. But I just wanted everybody to understand you're talking of a very small portion of the property within the Skidmore Old Town District. Thank you very much.
I was going to ask you about the design because the issues come up about the height and the design and then the issue of whether or not the concern is more over height than design. Have you looked at any designs yet of what it is that you're looking to do?
What we've done, and Gary Larson of Mulvaney G2 will come up and talk here a little later on, is we've done some massing studies. And there's, you know, I'm going to ask Mark, who's far more qualified than I am, but there's significant setbacks at 75 feet. The width of the building is only 70 feet wide instead of 100 feet wide between 2nd and 3rd Nash. So there are very significant setbacks. So we haven't designed the building yet. We've done massing studies, and we did that for pricing and to get to what the actual FAR is. And that's why we went to you with an 8.5 instead of 9, because we don't need 9. Thank you.
I'm Mark Adlin with Gurney Adlin Development Company. Our company is deeply committed to the development and preservation of historic resources as well as our environmental resources. To date, we've completed 5 historic renovations in the city, and we have another one on the drawing boards now. We don't view historic preservation and well-designed new development as incompatible, and quite the opposite. We think the juxtaposition, if done right, it creates great architecture. We see the two working together as a benefit to both. Offer as an example 2 pieces of the brewery blocks, which also was an edge property at the time, if you recall, much like the opportunity properties you're talking about today. On this project, the historic properties provide a unique basis for designing the new development, and the new development allowed us to invest in the historic properties, which otherwise might be laying fallow today. For the brewery itself, which next door we have a 145-foot building, and the armory itself, which next door we have a 175-foot building, both on the same block. The final product has been enormously successful, has driven rents in the district up, created other opportunities, and in fact, to date, now there's been an additional $750 million of development within 5 blocks of the brewery itself. What's particularly pertinent in today's hearing is how the success of the brewery blocks project has driven rents up in the Pearl. These higher rents have allowed us and other owners to redevelop other historic properties in the district. We see the opportunity to accomplish something similar in the Skidmore Old Town District, but tailored to the unique characteristics of the district. The building we're talking about would be the local headquarters of 2 major firms that we'll talk to today, and which have a significant Portland presence and offer us new jobs in the city. The building will also incorporate approximately 100 workforce housing units, which we feel we have a hole in our city for those, and think they're great opportunities for teachers, firefighters, and police to have housing in the central city. Given prevailing rents in the district today, this would be a challenging product, not to mention the economy, but can be done if the zoning and design guidelines allow for a financially feasible project. We have provided the Planning Bureau a series of development pro formas that show our project could not be accomplished without the higher height limits and FAR of approximately 8.5 to 1. Thus, we support the amendments to the zoning code. The feasibility of the project is also affected by design guidelines. As currently written, we believe they're in conflict and would encourage that those be brought in sync with each other.
Mark,
thank you.
I have one question. With respect to the workforce housing you alluded to in this district, operating within the guidelines with the changes that you're recommending, can you build a building that has workforce housing without a tax abatement or some other public subsidy?
I don't believe you can.
And do you believe that, therefore, we should be looking during this time when we're trying to jumpstart some projects at some kind of abatement project targeted specifically to workforce with some recapture mechanism to make sure there's a public benefit?
Absolutely do. And as most of you know, we've been talking about this for a year, trying to move something forward. We think there is a hole. We think we have 2 markets that we're not serving. The first one is young kids right out of school in a for rent or for sale product. They're tomorrow's leaders. They're tomorrow's business owners. And we need to get them in our central city today and keep them here. My theory is I think we'll have a better chance at getting families in the central city if we get them when they're young. The second population that we've uncovered in 2 of our projects now is we had a young woman come in and buy a unit, one of our buildings. Next week, we had 4 more firefighters buy, and her statement was, I never thought I could walk to my firehouse. Well, these people are not making $200.
There goes the neighborhood.
That's right.
In defense of my bureau, I will say on that point, though, 18% of our firefighters actually live in Portland. And I've been touring fire stations just posing the question, you know, would you under different circumstances? And what I'm finding is that older firefighters with large families, frankly, prefer to be in areas that are lower cost housing and more land. Younger firefighters, particularly single firefighters, would love to live downtown if there was affordable housing.
Yep. We've done a great job, I think, over the last probably 10 years building affordable housing for those that are economically deprived in a significant way or drug and alcohol issues. And we've done a great job until recently of building the high-end stuff. What we haven't done a good job of is providing some more